Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. To ask a question during the conference, please press star, then one. This conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to hand the meeting over to Flor Estevez. You may begin.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you very much for joining us for Molly Wendell's Career on Track number 8 today on Thursday, March 11th. Thank you. We have about 188 of you on the web and a few of you who have not joined the audio. So I would like us to just greet Molly, and if you would, just have a few minutes' patience. And Molly, if you could take us to the first chart, that would be great while we wait for the others to join. Terrific. So let me introduce your speaker for today's conference. Molly Wendell is the president of the Executives Network. She has been hosting this Career on Track series for a little over 8 months now, and graciously she has been donating her time to other fellow former and current greater IBMers, and to help you all with some of the tips and some of the expertise that she gained in 2 years and 3 days looking for another position. Molly has a book called A New Job Search that she will tell you about in the course of the call, and that we encourage you all to check out. There's a special discount for greater IBMers, which Molly will also tell you a lot about. There's 199 of you on the web. Hopefully the majority of you are also on the audio. Operator, can you confirm that? Tori?
Yes, ma'am. I show we have 170.
All right. Then we're just going to go ahead and join it. Thank you very much, Tori. Molly, without further ado, your call, Career on Track, the interview.
Okay, well, thank you, Flor. I'm not sure if you wanted to talk anything about it being recorded, Flor. Did you want to mention that?
All calls are recorded. I believe the operator said that when she introduced us.
Okay, perfect. All right, well, today we are going to talk about the interview and how to seal the deal. And one of the things when you're in the job search, as you go through the process, it can kind of be very challenging, especially in a time like today. And when you get to the interview, there is so much pressure put on the interview about doing great, about finally you have a chance. You have a chance to get face-to-face with someone. And I often think about Donald Trump and The Apprentice as the ultimate job interview, and think about the lessons they learned, the things that they did, and how they kind of went about getting a job. And when you think about the people who really excelled, those were people who got along with others well, who were confident, who were creative, who had good ideas, who also knew how to manage and utilize resources. And so think about that when you're thinking about interviewing, of how do you be someone that Donald Trump might like to hire. I don't know if you'd want to work with him, but it's just a food for thought. So here's what we are going to cover today. We're going to talk about ways to prepare for the interview, the different types of interviews, how to control the interview, and more importantly, if it's not going your way, how to get it back on track. Getting across your key messages and then closing the interview, how to walk out of the room and know exactly where you stand. So the first area we want to talk about is ways to prepare. And what we'll do is I'll go through a few slides, and then we'll open it up to questions, go through a few more, and then we'll open it up to more questions. So if you do have a question, just hold tight. And we will cover it at the question time. So first of all, one of the biggest things that I see people do, or the biggest mistakes that people make, is they over-prepare too much for the interview. The way they over-prepare is they spend too much time in the wrong areas. One of the first things that you want to do is Google people, look for bios, look at company websites, look at news releases, look at competitors' websites, look at industry associations, trend articles on the industry, and anything that you can find on the web. And there's lots of information on the web. But the other thing that a lot of people err in is they forget to talk to people. They forget to talk to past employers. They forget to talk to customers, previous customers, current customers, previous employees, competitors. And more information can be garnered from talking to people about what's really going on with that company, then I would suggest then sitting and looking on their website and looking in the news releases and seeing what's been put out in a controlled manner. So I remember when I was looking to kind of make a break into commercial insurance, I was wanting to do some business in commercial insurance. So one of the things I realized is I knew nothing about the industry. So one day I went onto LinkedIn, and I found a bunch of people who worked for the company, who had previously worked for the company that I was targeting. And I called them up. I found out where they worked because LinkedIn's really good about showing that. And I said, hey, I'm looking to learn more about this industry and specifically a few companies in the industry, and I was hoping you might be able to spend a few minutes of your time with me. And it was amazing how people from far away across the country and had no qualms about giving me so much information about how the company worked, what they thought was great, what they didn't think was great, who the other competitors, who were stronger, who were weaker, what advantages the company had over others. It was absolutely astounding. And you need to think about, how do I get that information? I might have a network of friends, and people know people, and I'm sure you could find someone who either worked for the company or used to work for the company or knows someone who worked for the company. So don't forget that one of your greatest resources is people. The other thing that you need to keep in mind is when you're in those interviews, you really need to prepare to understand what's going on with the other players. If you know that company right, left, backward, and forward, but you don't know the 15 other competitors and where the industry's going and who's making a play into that industry who's currently not a competitor, then you really haven't done a good enough job of preparing. And one of the biggest issues I see people doing is once they get an interview, they make that as a prepping for the interview an excuse to not do everything else, not do anything else. It's like studying for a final exam when you know you have the rest of your life to live. You've got to, if you put all your eggs in that basket and that doesn't come through, you've just wasted a lot of time. Now, if you put all your eggs in that basket and it does come through, you're probably thinking, that was probably a really good use of my time. But I see people prepping 3, 4, 5 days solid for one-hour meeting, and they over-prep. They get too much knowledge. They have information overload, and they don't know where to begin. And then when they get to the interview, they flail because they've just got too much information. Instead of picking the salient points, they just know everything. And then they also walk in to the interview acting like they know everything. And you've got to be very careful walking into an interview. Nobody knows the company better than the people at the company. So don't think just because you've done 5 days' worth of research that you know more than they do. And also, when you over-prepare too much, oftentimes you might suggest information to the people at the company, like, I saw that you're going into this area. Let's say it's a point-of-sale company, and you saw that they were going into the legal market. Well, maybe that information is not valid. A better way to kind of provoke that conversation would be, what other markets are you looking to entertain? Is it legal? Is it accounting? Is it transportation, distribution? Whatever the answer might be to help stir some discussion. But be careful about suggesting that you know it all because you've done all this prep work. So the other things to keep in mind are, who are you meeting with? Look at the background of that person. What kind of things are they involved in? Where did they used to work? How can you find out information about that person and what they do on a personal activity basis, and see who you might know who knows that person, so you might have to get a referral within them, or you might have a common ground, I would say. I remember interviewing with a woman, and before the interview, I Googled her, looked at her bio. I don't know if I've told the story before, but she was involved in a charity called Logopedics. And I bet on this call we have probably maybe one, maybe two, but possibly zero people who even know what Logopedics is. And I knew what Logopedics was because in college it was our national philanthropy for the sorority I was in. And I thought, you know what, she must be involved in this sorority. And it turns out she was an alumni of the same sorority I was. And so when I went in, immediately I started talking about the sorority, and we immediately had a bond. She had no idea how I knew that she was in that sorority, but it didn't really matter. But that connection, and that broke the ice right away, and I ended up being offered the job. And it was interesting. I wondered how many other people had walked in with a personal connection or some kind of common bond where it would help break the ice. So it made the whole conversation, the entire interview, much easier, and we were more friends than peer acquaintances. The other thing you want to keep in mind is, what do they need to know? And what they need to, when I talk about that, I mean, what kind of industry trends, what kind of information on the competition can you provide where you're valuable to that meeting? So if you walk in and never provide any value, then it's really a waste of time for them and it's a waste of time for you. But if you can walk in and spend an hour with someone and provide them with some value that's going to either help them in their job, help them advance the company, help them sign a new client, they're going to think more highly of you than other people who don't think about that coming in. And then the other thing you've got to have to think about is, let's say you end up not being the perfect person for the position, maybe there's another opportunity that they entertain you for that other opportunity because you brought additional value to the company. And then the final thing to keep in mind is, who do they need to know? You need to think about, who can I connect this person with? Again, how can I help them? Don't walk in thinking, I want to have a great interview so they'll hire me. Walk in thinking, how can I help them and how can I get them to like me so that they realize that they'd be crazy not to hire me? So think about who you can connect them with. As you're talking to them, you might have some ideas on the front end, but oftentimes it happens a little bit more while you're in the meeting. You know, you sit there and go, hey, you know who you ought to meet? And you throw a bunch of names out or a couple names out, and it's amazing how that changes the whole nature of the interview. It changes their demeanor. It makes them think, wow, this person is really thinking. Wow, they have an idea for me, and they want to help me, and this is an interview for them. So it kind of sets you apart and puts you at a different level. The other couple things that that I would recommend in preparing is, when you do go to the interview, always bring a notepad. Always make sure that it's not a fresh, clean notepad. You want to have pages and pages and pages of written information. You want it to look like you're busy. Don't look like you have nothing else to do and this is the only thing you have going on is this one-hour interview. You need to make it look like you're a little bit popular and a lot of in the hunt for other people. Be sure to have other people's business cards in it. You know, maybe, and just make sure that you've written, if you're going to use a legal pad, make sure that the first page has already been written on. Maybe the first 10 pages have already been written on so that you have to go find a clean page to write on. And it will make them realize that you're not just one who's waiting around for one deal. You've got a lot going on, and they'd be lucky to have you. So those are a couple ways to prepare. Next thing we're going to talk about is the actual interview. And the most important thing is, know your objective, okay? Interviewing and job search is like dating, and I know I've talked about this previously, but when you meet someone, you're not trying to get married to them right away. What you're trying to do is to get the second date. You know, you're on a first date. All you need is a second date. When you're in a job interview, if you're very early in the process, you're not looking to get the offer right then. You're looking to get to the next step, to get through the filter. And so knowing that objective, it takes a lot of pressure off. And so you need to really kind of step back and say, look, we don't have to get married. I really have to find out more information about this person before I even entertain being here long term. And so do they. So a couple different types of interviews. We have the informational, traditional one-on-one, and the panel, and we'll talk about those each individually. But just remember another thing is, just because you're prepared doesn't mean they are. How many times have you been an interviewer, and it's in between a bunch of meetings, and you are trying to fit that interviewee in, and you don't really have a lot of time to prep. And about 5 minutes before they show up, you grab their resume, quickly scan it, think, okay, what am I going to ask them, and immediately they walk in the door. And so you've got to remember that that's often the case with people. So it just hiring a new person is often a hassle or an inconvenience. It's really, it's usually reactive, and there's a long process, and it takes time. And so you need to remember where they're coming from. And so if they're very busy and you're taking up a bit of their time, even though you're probably sitting there going, yeah, but the company needs to hire someone. But, yeah, the company still needs to do its job. Everyone in the company still needs to do their current job, too. Hiring is an extra job. So just kind of remember that scenario. And the more fun, interesting, enjoyable you can make it for the person, the more likely you're going to get that second date.
Molly, I wonder if you can give me just a second, please.
Sure.
I'd like to ask those of you on the phone, there's about 250 people, more or less, between the web and the audio. It is very distracting to our speaker, and you came here to listen to Molly and her expertise, to see the chat room and all the activity there. Kindly, for the second time, please do not engage in the chat room unless you cannot join this call. And if you're hearing me, you're on the call. So please, the chat room is shut down until Molly opens for Q&A. Thank you. Sorry, Molly.
Oh, no problem. Okay, let's talk about informational interviews. And first of all, I call them informational interviews because that's what everyone knows them as. But don't call someone up and say, hey, I'd like an informational interview. It sounds like you're still in college, number one. It also sounds like an interview. And the person might say, well, we're not hiring. And it always becomes about a job. And if they're not hiring, conversation closed. But if you call them up and say, hey, I'd just like to grab a few minutes of your time. When do you have time to chat? And make it very informal, then it completely changes the game. And it's not so much like an interview, but it's more of like an informal discussion. It's really more of a networking conversation. And that's what an informational interview really is a networking conversation. The purpose of those is to learn about the company or the industry, find out who they know, and again, get them to like you so they open up their network to you. And the kind of questions that you want to ask very broad questions, things that are not necessarily provocative, but you want to open up the conversation. So what do you like about the company? How long have you been here? How long do you plan to stay? What other companies are interesting to you? In this area, who is your biggest competition? What other peripheral industries are you guys affecting? Who's interesting from a customer perspective? Who's interesting from a buyer or supplier perspective? And start building the conversation around trends, things happening, what's different. I met someone recently who had been in the greeting card industry for 22 years. And I said, wow. So what's different in the greeting card industry now? And how much has it changed in 22 years? And he said, it has changed dramatically. And then he said, it's changed even more so in the past 5 years. And I'm like, well, tell me about those changes. What are they? And it gets him to open up. I also met someone who'd been in the floral industry for about 25 years. And he also said that the floral industry has changed more in the last 4 years than it has in the previous 25 years combined. So, they start to open up, and you start to understand who they know, what they know, and think about in any industry. Most every industry uses technology, and if you came from IBM, you've been in technology. If you're currently at IBM, you're currently in technology, and there's always that common bond of technology. So you might ask questions like, "How does technology affect your business? How does it make it more interesting? What's gotten in the way with technology? What can you do better? What can you not do at all? What do you not want to do at all?" And things like that, and just kind of get the conversation going. And I spent a lot of time on a previous webinar talking about networking and networking meetings, so I don't want to spend too much time on these informational interviews, but simply to say make them more about a networking conversation. The next are the one-on-one interviews. We're going to go through these three types, and then we're going to open it up for questions. The one-on-one interviews are your traditional interviewer. Traditional, you come in, you set an appointment with one person, you're scheduled, you're probably one of many. People often ask what order you should go. Should I be first? Should I be last? And the reality is, if you're the right person, it really doesn't matter what order you go in. So just go in and be the right person. And here's how you do that. First of all, you want to be aware of the situation. You want to know how many people they're talking to. You want to know where you fall in that number. And you want to get that out right up front, because if you try and do it at the end, you're typically too rushed and it's too easy to forget this, and you walk away not knowing where you stand. So you want to ask the questions. So how long have you been looking for this kind of person? And how many people have you spoken to? And how many people are you planning to speak to? And what makes me interesting? Or why are we even talking today? How did I bubble up to the top, or, you know, the top group? Perhaps they'll say, well, this is our first round. We're planning on meeting with 15 people in our first round, which is kind of a lot. And then we're going to go to three people. And from the three people, we're going to have those three meet with our executive team. And from there, we're going to make a decision. That may be the process. It may not. But if that's the process, then your goal is to become one of those three people. And you have to think, how can I become one of those three people? What can I do in this discussion to be one of those three people? So understand what the situation looks like. You know, seek first to understand, then start asking the questions. Also know your time limitations. How much time do they have today? So just ask that, plain and simple. How much time do we have today? Oftentimes, if you don't ask that question and you're in an interview, and let's say they had an hour, but they decided that you weren't the right fit, and they might try and cut it short and have you walk out of there earlier than an hour, then you might think that you didn't do such a great job because they kind of cut it short, because an hour is pretty standard traditional time for an interview. But what if they really only had 30 minutes and you went 45 minutes and you were walking out of there after 45 minutes thinking that you're not the right fit because they cut it short, but really they went 15 minutes long, you just didn't know. So really get your expectations set appropriately. If they say they have an hour and you go an hour and a half, I would say things are looking good. If they say you have an hour and they go 30 minutes, I would say things are not looking so good. At least you know, again, where you stand. And it's always one of the most frustrating things about relationships, whether it's interviewing, job search, or just every relationship, is not knowing where you stand. So if you can get those expectations set right up front, you're going to have a better idea of where you stand. Also, remember that you need to determine if this company aligns with your objectives. Are they the kind of company you're looking for? Don't forget that you're interviewing them just as much as they're interviewing you. So think about the types of questions you want to ask. You want to ask questions that are specific and relevant to the industry, to the trends, to the company. You want to be very inquisitive. You want to sometimes be borderline bold. You want to sometimes be audacious and really make them think, you know, this person is not afraid to ask the tough questions, to ask the thought-provoking questions. And really, we don't need people who just answer what we already tell them to do. We need people who can figure that stuff out and ask those tough questions to make us, to make sure we're on our toes at all times. Things like industry trends, as I said before, things like competition. Who are you most scared of out of all your competitors? Who are you least scared of? Is there any one competitor that you are targeting exclusively? When good people leave, where do they go? When you attract employees, why are people attracted to the company? What makes this company great? You know how they always ask the question of people, what makes you the candidate to beat? Well, you need to turn around and say, what makes you the company I'd want to work for, right? But you can't say it like that because that just sounds mean. So you've got to ask it a little more nicely, like, why do people come here? Why do people join the company? Why did you join the company? Start making it personal to this person. What compelled you to join? What do you like about it? What don't you like about it? What kind of scared you? What do you wish you had known prior to joining? And what was a pleasant surprise? Things like that. The other thing that you have to ask yourself is what kind of company, what are you looking for in a company in terms of the kind of company it is? So you might ask questions about how they contribute to society. What organizations are they involved with? and what charities, and how are they part of the community, or are they part of the community? What are they trying to accomplish there? If that's important to you, and then you need to start asking that right away. If that's important to them, they're going to like you more than someone who doesn't even think twice about that. And I think about those companies that are very focused on charity and charitable organizations and ensuring people have a good balance. They want people to ask those kinds of questions because they're proud to say what they do. And so you want to think, you want to, if that's you, then ask those questions. If that's not you, don't ask those questions. It's okay. Okay, next interview style we will talk about is the panel interview. And panel interviews, they're a little more difficult because you never know if you're going to have, I mean, if you have, you might have three people in the room, you might have five people, you might have eight people, which quite honestly is a ridiculous waste of time for most of the people in the room. But that's okay. Some companies like to do that. They think it's a great use of everybody's time. But one of the key things that you need to do is connect with each person in the room. You need to strike a conversation with each one individually and collectively. And that's very difficult if you walk in, they're already seated, and you sit down, and then it ends, and then you leave. So you never have any kind of casual time where you're standing there having a conversation, kind of an off-side-off conversation. But you have to remember that the more relaxed you are, the more confident you look. So as you're connecting, you need to make eye contact with each person. There's a game that we used to play in sales training, and it was a presentation class. And everyone would raise their hand, and you would have to stand up in front of the room for 5 minutes and talk about a specific topic. And when someone in the room felt like you had spoken to them for 10 seconds in a row, they would put their hand down. And it was one of the greatest classes I've ever seen for training the speaker to connect with people in the audience. Because if you connect with them for 10 seconds, you connect with them for life almost. So when you would look at one person and make eye contact with one person, all of a sudden after about 10 seconds, not only would that person's hand go down, but the 10 people surrounding that person's hand would go down. Everyone thought you were looking at them, even though you were only looking at one person. When you do a panel interview, you need to make sure that you connect with one person, talk one-on-one for each question, pick one person to talk one-on-one to. Don't shift and be shifty gaze eye, you know, that goes and moves from side to side and person to person to person, because that makes you look nervous. Just pick one person to answer that question for, then the next question, move on to a different person to say that answer. The other thing that you need to do is make it enjoyable, make it fun. Sit back, relax, have a good time. The confidence, again, is such a key factor. So many people say, I hired them because they were just so confident. They knew what they were doing. And the reality was, maybe they didn't know what they were doing, but they sure looked like they did. And so you need to really look like you know what you're doing and have that confidence, sitting back in your chair, crossing your legs, moving forward when you need to, but not staying forward is really, really important. A lot of people say you need to imitate their body language. Well, when you have a panel, you probably have a lot of people with different body language. You don't always want to be too casual and too relaxed. You want to kind of move forward when you need to and sit back when you want to. Okay, types of questions that you want to ask in a panel interview. The most important thing is to direct specific questions toward one panel member. So instead of, they might ask you a question, and you say, you know, I'm really glad you asked that, and you'll answer it, and then you will go right into asking someone a question. You know, Tom, I was thinking about this, or that brings up a really good point. Have you ever thought about this? And follow it up immediately with a question, but make sure you direct it to a panel member. You can't just direct it to anybody. I don't know if you know all the, in 911, when someone has an emergency, and there's been studies shown that when they tell a group of people, there might be five people in the area and one person is down on the ground maybe having a heart attack, and you're standing there and you look at the whole group and you say, call 911, nobody will do it. But if you point to one person and say, you, call 911, that person will do it. So think about somebody versus anybody versus specifically a person, and you want to direct your questions to one specific person. Please don't make it the same specific person every time. Share the wealth and make sure you ask a question of each individual person and then make eye contact with them. Try to engage that relationship. Also, be inquisitive. Ask follow-up questions. If they answer a question, don't just take their answer. Say, oh, that's interesting. And here's my fallback follow-up question for when I have no idea what to say. I say, oh, interesting. Talk more about that. And then they do. And it's absolutely amazing. It's like this magic question that anyone who tells you anything, if you just say, talk more about that, 99 times out of 100, they will. And it's a great way to find out more information, especially when you weren't sure where to take the conversation. I really wished I had known that question when I was in IBM sales school, because I think I would have done better. Okay, Tori, let's open it up for questions. If people have questions about the specific types of interviews or a situation where they've had a challenge in a specific type of interview. So, Tori, can you tell us, tell everyone if they want to ask a question, how they go about doing that?
Yes, please. Thank you. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star, then 1. To withdraw your question, press star, then 2. Once again, for any phone questions, it's star 1.
I'll answer one question before they ask, because too many people ask this, and lets me know that you guys should go and join the Tips and Tools class. We have a replays section in the events tab of the Greater IBM Connection community site, that's www.greaterIBM, where every event is then placed either in a podcast or separate charts and audio. So if you miss any portion of Molly's call today, look for it in a few days. In about 2 days, it should be posted. Thank you.
Okay, Tori, do we have any questions?
We sure do. Our first question from Alan Salvi.
Okay, Ellen or Alan?
Alan, yes.
Alan. Okay, great. Go ahead, Alan.
Just a simple one on logistics. You had mentioned that there were some people you wanted to get in touch with in a particular company, and so you went on LinkedIn, you found a person, and you called them. That's not so easy for me. I'm a LinkedIn member and have been for some time, got a great profile, got plenty of references, but I don't have a membership level that allows me to get information on people other than their basic profile, which doesn't include a phone number or an email address. If I'm not connected with a person, I can't even send them an email because I haven't paid for that special mail-in service or whatever they call it. So how did you just call them?
Well, oftentimes with all these people, their current company was listed. So I just went on to the current company on the corporate website and called the main number and asked for them.
Aha, okay.
Easy, Frank?
Yep, that works.
Okay,
enough.
Great. Next question.
Alan, I just a quick reference to Alan. You may want to check in the call that was recorded from the LinkedIn expert and Jane Scandura last week. Why don't you look that up? I think it will be very helpful for you.
And also, Alan, don't forget to use the Greater IBM community, too, and see where people work right now, and they can probably help you. The other thing is, if you don't have the big LinkedIn group, then it sounds like you might need to get out there and network a little more, too. Be sure to do that. Make me proud.
Our next question is from Roger.
Yes, my question is, how would you approach an interview over the phone?
I have to tell you, I hate phone interviews, but what I do is I'd make it exactly like the informational interview. I would control it with questions. I would not let them get a word in edgewise. And I did this with another interview, a phone interview where it had to be that way. I started it off with, hey, before we get started, let me ask you a quick question. And that quick question turned into 1 hour's worth of questions. And about an hour into it, the CEO said, Molly, can I ask you a question now? And I go, oh, I'm so sorry, I'm out of time. And he goes, really? I go, no, I'm just messing with you. What do you want to know? And but I ended up getting the offer for the job, and I knew it was because I controlled it with questions. The other thing is, when you do that, it really takes the pressure off them, especially if they were unprepared. And it's really much easier to be unprepared when it's a phone call versus an in-person, because at least when you're walking in person, they try and clean up their desk a little bit because they know you're coming. In a phone call, you have no idea what their desk looks like. You know, you have no idea if they're on email or what else they might be doing while you're on that call. So just shooting them with question really takes the pressure off them. So I would focus on that.
Okay, and my second question was, if you get to the second round of interviews, would you still approach with the ask a lot of questions approach, or would you try something different?
No, I'd ask a lot of questions, but then I'd do a little bit more of the controlling the interview, which I'm going to talk about next, and I'll talk a little bit about how to do that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, great.
Our next question is from Steve.
Okay, Steve.
Good afternoon. My question is on handshakes. Certainly on a one-on-one interview or information interview in person, I would offer a warm handshake to the person I'm meeting. In a panel interview, however, stepping into a room with five people behind a row of desks with a chair and table placed in the middle of the room for me, would I approach each person as I came in the room to shake their hand, or would I simply take my seat?
You know what, Steve? I think that would be a very strong, confident thing to do. It would show that you're not scared to walk around the room, to make those connections, to greet the people with a smile on your face. I think it's a great idea, and I hope you have a great handshake so you make a great first impression. But that I would absolutely do that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any more, Tori?
Yes, thank you. Our next question from Textbook.
Okay.
Yes. I would like your advice on how you would handle a gauntlet interview.
A gauntlet interview. Is that like...
It's a serial one-on-one. In other words, you go from, say, the team lead in the department manager, the department manager's manager, the VP, the director, those type of things, one-on-one. But each hour you progress to a different individual.
I would. Here's what I would do. I would treat it just like the one-on-ones, very, you know, specific, relevant. But I would make sure they're relevant to that particular function or that particular area. There would be some common questions that I would ask the same for everyone. Things like what compelled you to join. But I would ask a question to a president or VP very differently than I would ask to a director, manager, or someone who might be a peer. But it would be very much exactly what I talked about in the one-on-ones. Just keep doing a bunch of one-on-ones right in a row. Make sure you bring your own water, because not everyone offers you water, and you'll probably get very thirsty listening to all the answers that they have to provide.
Thank you.
The other thing also is you want to think about how they're aligned and how they have an alliance. So certain people get along better with other people in the company, and let's say you meet with five people, figure out who likes whom, who's a bigger influence to the decision maker than whom, right? And try and navigate your way through that by probing of questions of, how long have you worked for John? Oh, what's he like to work for? You know, what were you surprised at? What do you really appreciate? Things like that. And you can often tell who's more aligned with a boss than who's not. And those people who are more aligned will probably tend to have more of an influence in the decision. Okay?
Okay.
Great.
Our next question from Alex.
I'm curious about finding out discussions around salary expectations. When I interviewed for a position, I put down it was negotiable. And then when I did the phone interview with the person, they asked, what range I was looking at. Actually, I asked them first, and they said, well, they don't give out that information. So I don't know if I'm going to come in too high or too low, but it's information that I feel like I need to have. And I've tried going other routes, talking to different people to find that out, but I haven't been successful up to this point.
Well, I would say with salary information, you really have to be careful. I would never bring it up. I always would let them bring it up. And if they ask me, I'd say, well, kind of what's your budget? What are you budgeting for the position? because you really do want to know whether you need to take yourself out of the running if that's not the right fit. But the other thing you need to remember is that position is probably not the only one that they're going to be looking for ever in their whole entire life. So I know people who've gone in and interviewed for manager roles when they're really a VP level, who've then gotten moved to the VP level and the appropriate salary expectation for that level because that's really the right fit for them. But they wanted an opportunity to get in the door to have the discussion. So I would be very careful. I would never put out a number. I'd always say, what are you guys thinking? And if they say, well, what are you thinking? You say, you know what? I'm really expensive. How expensive do you plan to pay? You know, I don't know. Kind of make it so it eases the tension, I would say. You know, bring something up that would, you know, for the right thing, I'll work for free. But I don't know if this is the right thing. What do you have in mind? I don't know. So you just have to, but you want to get them on the table first so you can determine whether it's the right opportunity. And you also don't want to, if you give them the information first, they can, if they were looking at a much higher number, now they don't have to look at a much higher number anymore.
Exactly. So, that's part of my concern, you know.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with saying, well, what are you expecting to pay? You know, what is your – companies typically have a grade. They have a they have an expectation of what they're planning to pay. And if you come back and put that number out first, you know, he who speaks first loses, you're going to lose.
Okay.
So just don't do it. And don't bring it up. Let them bring it up.
Okay, sounds
good. But I would say the only time that I would bring it up is when it's very early on in the process and I'm not in the interview, and it's through someone who's not directly with the company.
Mm. Okay.
So to kind of get an idea, you could also talk to other people in the company who are friends of friends and say, you're just trying to get a better understanding of how much, what kind of comp do they do as a company. There's oftentimes very good, find an ex-employee there.
Okay.
Who left the company, and they usually are pretty good about telling what kind of the range is that you can expect.
And again, that might be something I could find on LinkedIn, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Hey, Molly, you're at 248.
Yep. Okay. All right. Tori, are there any more questions? Because otherwise we'll move on.
Yes, we do still have a handful.
Okay, let's take go ahead. Let's do them quickly.
Thank you. Our next question from Lynn.
Lynn, go ahead.
Yes. How do you best cut to the chase when you see a long listing of job responsibilities and job skills? How can you, like, get them to narrow in on what they're really looking for?
Well, cutting to the chase, I would say, you know, it looks like you're expecting the world out of this person. What are the three most important things that you expect this person to accomplish in the next 3 to 6 months?
Okay.
And I'd net it out. Okay?
Uh-huh. Thank you.
Okay. Next?
Our next question from Randy.
Randy.
Hi there. Mine was kind of along the lines, same lines about salary, only I was wondering, like, if you're interviewing for a job that is, say, maybe $100,000 more than you currently make, but you don't necessarily want to give your current salary.
Right.
Maybe you don't want to give your current salary out because you don't want them to arbitrarily cut you out of the deal.
Right.
You know, how do you negotiate something like that?
You have the straightest face you could possibly imagine, and you look and you don't react at all. You say, okay, okay. And then you move on and quickly ask another question.
Okay.
All right. Just change the subject while you're in the game.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Next question from Raj.
Okay, Raj.
My question is, how do you recommend responding if an interviewer keeps returning to the same point over and over again? I faced this at an interview. It's as if they didn't particularly like the answer, but they just kept returning to it for 20 minutes.
You know what I might say is, wow, sounds like this is a really important area, and I'm not sure that I'm getting across what I'm trying to get across. Is there, and put it back in their court to say, is there, what's going on there? You know, talk more about that. You've asked a similar question, or you don't want to put them on the spot and say, why do you keep asking me the same old question? But you've asked a similar question. Sounds like it's really important. Talk more about that.
Okay.
And get them to expand, because there's absolutely something else going on. Oftentimes, it's because the previous person who was in the role either did not focus in that area, did not have that skill, or it was a huge problem.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Tori, any more? Or are we?
Yes,
the queue clean.
We do have a question from Ma'am.
Okay.
Yes, Molly. First impression is the last impression. How you make a first impression when you do the shake hand and whatever, or
okay.
You greet?
You do your handshake correctly. In my book, I talk about that. I think, I'm not sure if I have it on a blog or not, but you do a nice firm handshake, make eye contact, smile, double pump, know when to let go, and just be normal. Don't have some crazy handshake, and be relaxed. Don't be uptight. Don't be creepy. You know, too many people are so uptight when they come and meet someone. Their hands are sweaty. Or they just went to the restroom and they forgot to dry their hands completely. They go to shake someone's hand. That does not leave a good impression. So just be kind of normal and practice with people if you're not sure whether you're normal or not with your handshake, okay? And make do it in a safe environment to say, do I look weird when I do this? But just a smile, make eye contact. That's another big thing is people who don't make eye contact when they're shaking hands. They're leaving an impression that they're kind of shifty and not trustworthy. So just remember that. I hope
Thank
that
you.
Helps. We're gonna continue on, Tori, and if we could hold off on the other questions, if we have any, so I can bring up, we'll have time for some more questions right at the end, if that's okay. Okay, so let us talk about controlling the interview. And this is my key hot button about interviews, is if you control the interview, your chances of getting the position are far greater than if you let them control the interview. And the first thing in controlling the interview, again, you have to determine if this company is aligning with your objectives, if this position is aligning with your objectives. Is this a place where I want to be? I have a friend who interviewed for a company. It was a horrible interview. And I said, well, is that even a person you'd want to work for? And he said, no, but if they offered me a job tomorrow, I'd take it. And I'm like, well, that doesn't align with who you are. You know, you won't last in a position like that, and you'll be out looking in another 2 or 3 months again. So unless you're looking to keep being an expert in the job search and keep doing it over and over again, make sure that you're interviewing them just as much as they're interviewing you. The next question, I think this was Roger who asked a little bit about this, and I'm trying to remember the context, but I know this was the point I wanted to make, is how to demonstrate confidence and capability. And you control the interview by asking lots of questions, but you also want to ensure that they know that you know what you're talking about. And the way you do that is you'll ask a question, they may answer it, and then you followed up with a response that kind of demonstrates your knowledge, immediately followed up by another question. So you might say, so what is your channel strategy? And they'll say, well, we're really focused on international, and we'd like to target Africa and Asia, and we haven't done a great job of doing that. And you say, that's really interesting. When I was looking to do that for IBM, we actually had a really unique way to target Asia, and we ended up exceeding expectations within the first 6 months. It was absolutely amazing. So tell me more about what your priorities are in that area. And so you demonstrate it by saying, hey, I've done this. I know how to do it. Or if you haven't done it before and you know of another company or you've read an article, you can say, you know, it's interesting. It sounds like you're going through the same issues that Company X faced. And kind of here's what they did, and then you follow it up with another question. While that might not be your own capability, it shows that you have knowledge of the subject in the area. And so one of the big things in when people hire someone is they're worried, is this a person who's going to take us to the next level? Is this a person who can bring the skills, the resources, the knowledge to the table? And if you can provide that by that being your background, great. But if it's not your background, make sure you get knowledge about it so that you show you have the resources to get the job done. There is actually an ex-IBMer who I think is the best person I've ever seen who demonstrates competence and capability in an interview. She is absolutely amazing in an interview, and I hear some of the things she says. During the interview, she tells me about how she answered a specific question, and so great at really asking the questions and sprinkling in her capabilities throughout without her doing all the talking, but controlling it and forwarding it right back to them and making them answer more questions than questions. So think about if you're actually going to answer anything or if you're going to bring up a topic, be sure to follow it up immediately with a question so it doesn't give them a chance to gain control, okay? And the other thing is you just have to remember, you want to get them to like you. You want them to think you're the right person for the job. So you need to be engaging and friendly and interesting and knowledgeable and someone who is going to be an A player for their team. And so if you're sitting there nervous and tense and desperate and reactive, you know, you can hire nervous, tense, desperate, reactive all day long. People don't want to pay big money for nervous, tense, desperate, reactive. They want to pay big money for confidence, competence, and people, A players, who are going to take them to the next level. So just remember to be that person. And if you, like Cammie said in the branding interview, if you're not that, fake it till you make it, right? Just act like you are, because when you do, you will be that. Okay, there's another situation in the interview that happens, and sometimes the interview gets derailed. It just goes awry. And there are situations where people, you know, maybe it's a bad day for the interviewer. Maybe they just have too much to do and you are very much an inconvenience, and it very much shows. And so what you need to do is a couple things. When it gets derailed and they're just firing off question after question after question after question, you're being reactive, 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 you need to stop and take control. You need to take control by giving your answer and then following up with a question and then following that up with a question and turning it completely around. If it doesn't look like it's going to go your way when you try and do that, you need to step back and make it more personal. So start making it about them, not about the company. Start making it about them, not about the position they're hiring for. Questions again like, what compelled you to join? How do you like it here? It sounds interesting. And you know, what was challenging? What did you not expect with the company? What was a pleasant surprise for you? What were your first 90 days like, and how's that different from now? And what do you hope to accomplish, or what haven't you been able to accomplish that's really, you know, tugging at you because you really need to get that accomplished? So try and make it personal, and then also look for ways to help them. If you walk out of there and you didn't help them, you didn't do your job in the interview. You didn't bring your part of the bargain to the table. I have a friend who had a horrible interview with someone, and he walked out of there and said, this guy was just rapid fire. It was obvious he had no time for me, and I tried to regain control by asking questions, and he wouldn't answer them. He just kept asking me more and more questions. And I said, okay, so how did you help them? How did you help him? And he said, well, I didn't. I go, well, why not? Shame on you. You know, go in, look for ways to help them. Did you give him a lead? Did you give him a customer? Did you give him a contact? Did you give him a personal relationship? How did you go and connect that person with someone else? How did you completely change the game? There's another situation, a friend of mine, Mike, who had an interview with this guy, Steve, that I'd set up for him. And he said, Mike called me afterward, and I said, I so had to go with Steve because I knew Steve personally, I knew Mike personally, and they're both great guys. And Mike told me, it was horrible. I was obviously not the right person Steve was looking for. I mean, it was unreal how horrible it was. And I just was cringing. I'm like, oh, gosh, Steve is never going to let me introduce him to anyone again. And then Mike said, but you know what I did? I kind of stopped it. I said, look, about 20 minutes in, he said, look, it's pretty obvious, and I'm not what you're looking for. But now that we're here, why don't we kind of brainstorm on some other ideas and take the time to have a different conversation and make it not about this job. And they actually built a relationship based on that. And Mike knew he wasn't going to get the job anyway, so he tried to see what he could milk out of the discussion with the CEO, and it turned out great. It turned out into good connections and good ideas and good brainstorming instead of this confrontational interview where Mike was not the right fit. So think about things like that. If it's not going your way and you know all bets are lost anyway, just go ahead and stop. Say, time out. Let's take this in a new direction because it's not going to work for either of us. It's not working for either of us. So those are some tips on controlling the interview. The other thing, when I talked about confidence and capability, it's really important to get your key message across. Your key message that you are capable and you know how to do this stuff. And they're not taking a chance on you. One of the biggest issues companies have, especially in an economy like today, is they're worried about taking a chance on someone, an unknown entity. So you need to be a known entity whether you have that knowledge or not. So certain ways that you can be that person is ask a lot of questions that maybe you don't have background in that industry or that particular area, but you've done a lot of research and you're asking really smart questions. People no longer think you don't have experience in there. They think you do, and they make that assumption. So what you don't say often says more than what about you than what you do say. So just remember, you don't need to be the person who's trying to sell them about you. That's desperate. You need to be the person who's confident, who asks the leading questions, and gets them to derive that they believe you know more than you do. One of my favorite games when I was growing up was called Don't Spill the Beans. I put a little picture on there. I'm so thankful for the internet for having a picture of it because I certainly don't have the game anymore. But just keep that in mind. Don't spill the beans. Quit telling them everything about you. Remember, again, that you're not trying to get married. You're just trying to get the second date. So you don't need to give everything away. Remember, whether you're in a relationship or not, the more you talk about yourself, the more bored other people are. The more you proactively talk about yourself instead of answering if people are engaged and asking you questions about yourself. So quit trying to sell yourself and be very confident. Start asking the questions, and they will surmise or deduce that you have that knowledge. So you don't have to worry about spilling the beans. They'll figure it out. Just kind of whet the appetite. And again, focus on getting the second date, not getting married. Okay, let's talk about closing the interview. And then we are going to go to questions after this. Closing the interview. You need to understand the process. And I talked about this earlier. Right on the front end, you're going to get the process. You're going to say, how many people are you talking to? How many people have you spoken to? Where do I sit in this process? And then, where do I stand in rank order? And you don't necessarily have to say in rank order, but where do I stand? Am I one of your top five? Am I one of your bottom five? Or am I going to walk out of here and we're never going to see each other again? And depending on what the process was that they laid out in the beginning, you need to ask for the order. Let me give you an example of this. I was meeting with an executive from a large company, and he was interested in hiring a director, and I was speaking to him about this role, and I said, well, Jeff, how many people are you talking to? And he said, well, we're talking to about 25. And I said, wow, that's a lot of people. He goes, yeah, we're going to have meetings with 25 of them, and then we're going to get the top three, and the top three will meet the president, and from there we'll make a decision. And I said, oh, okay, good. And what kind of time frame are you working on? And he told me the time frame, and I said, okay. And then and he gave me the time frame of they were hoping to have the 25 done this week and then the following week or the week after have them meet with the president. I said, okay, great. And then I start asking him questions about his industry, questions about the business, questions about the role, what he's looking for, questions about the candidate, what he wants to get out of the role. And then at the end, I did a trial close. I said, so Jeff, when do you want me to meet with the president? And he said, how about next week? And right then I knew I was one of the top three. And had I not said that, I wouldn't have known. If I said, when do you want me to meet with the president, he might have said, well, we really have to talk to some other people. I could probably surmise that I'm not part of the top three. If I had just said, what are the next steps, he would probably have said, well, we need to talk to the other people and blah, blah, blah. And I would have walked out there not knowing. And one of the things sometimes it's scary to know. Sometimes you hear something that you don't want to hear, but you might as well hear it now and save yourself a lot of time than waiting and waiting and wondering. So quit worrying about being, you know, knowing too much about the process and get real smart about where you stand, who you are. Are you number one? Are you the candidate to beat? Or are there five other candidates in front of you, and now you know that probably your time is best spent elsewhere, and maybe go talk to some other competition. So when you walk out of there, you need to agree on a timeline. You say, so when should I expect to hear back from you? They might see next, well, we're looking to hire within 2 weeks, or we'll call you next week. And then throw it back to them, so again, you know where you stand. You say, is that next week by the 15th, or is that next week by the 19th, or do you mean really by the end of the month? And by month, do you mean March? So get it clear so that you're not sitting there saying, oh, they said next week, but next week includes a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and by the way, Saturday and Sunday. So you really don't know. So get clear on the exact date, pinpoint them to a date, and I don't say you don't need to pinpoint them to a time, but certainly pinpoint them to a date, and then say, I'm going to write that down, and this is magic, by the way. Be very visible and proclaim, I'm going to write that down, and then write it down so that they see it. And when they see it, they see an action item and know that you're going to follow up. So if I don't hear from you, let's say you said by the 19th, if I don't hear from you by the 22nd, should I call you, or do you want me to wait till the 23rd? And put the ball back in your court that you have the right to follow up and see what they say. But the more I wrote down and said, I'm going to write that down, and I wrote down, okay, let me just make sure I got this correct, and I repeated back what I heard, it was amazing how prompt and responsive they were than if I had just walked out of there and said, oh, I look forward to hearing from you. So get very specific and make sure they see that you write it down and you are going to follow up with them if you don't hear from them otherwise and you give them a date. It really puts the onus on them, and they tend to be way more responsive than they would normally, even if you are the right person. Okay, send a thank you. I say this is optional because I got to tell you, the thank you note does not make or break your job. I was recently hiring some people, interviewing some people. I interviewed 8 people in one day, actually 9 people in one day. I did 10-minute interviews. That's my little trick. And one person sent me a thank you note. After the first 5 minutes of us meeting, I knew she wasn't the right person. She sent me a thank you note, but it didn't really matter because her thank you note, I don't even know if I've opened it. To be honest with you, I probably should go find it and see what it said. But she wasn't the right person, so it doesn't matter. It's nice, it's polite, but it's not going to, too many people worry so much about that thank you note, and it's not going to get you the job or not get you the job. Think about other relevant follow-up methods as well. So let's say you see an article that might be interesting based on a discussion you had. Why don't you PDF it and send it on over? Let's say you heard about something the competition was doing. Why don't you send a quick line that says, not sure if you're familiar, but I heard someone over here is doing this, or I heard this customer's thinking about this. I'd be glad to connect you with the CEO or the president or someone over at that company to learn more. Let me know if you're interested. Again, think about what value you can bring to the table in your follow-up and how relevant you can be. And that will, things like that, take you from, you know, 2 or 3 closer to the number one. So just remember that. The last thing to remember, and then we'll go to questions, is to have fun. Be someone you want to work with, someone they want to work with. You know, I can't tell you how many people have come into an interview. They're so nervous. They're so desperate. And they're not even fun or interesting. And you sit there and go, I wouldn't hire you. Why would anyone hire you? You know, be someone that everyone would hire. And be the candidate to beat by being that great, confident, knowledgeable person who demonstrates competence and confidence and asks lots of questions, knows where they stand, and is fun to work with, okay? So that's kind of all I had for today. Tori, I keep calling you Kathy, sorry. Tori, if we have other questions, can you remind everyone how to ask a question?
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 at this time. Our first question comes from Mark Stamper.
Okay, Mark.
Hi, great material today. If you are have an advocate, a supporter, who is, you know, taking you into the organization and says you're a fit, they like you, your credentials are strong, et cetera, but they're not the final decision maker, and you then have to meet with several people, like vice president level, above that person, you said the questions would be different. How would you handle that to make your supporters credibility vested and then also, you know, make success with the other people you've been meeting with?
Okay, so questions relevant to the role, right? And questions relevant to the person in the role. So questions I would ask a director level might be more internal. Questions I would ask a VP level might be more strategic.
Uh-huh.
External, you know, what's affecting the business from an overall perspective.
And so kind of raise up and think bigger,
yeah,
level the higher you go?
Yeah, exactly.
Strategic, okay, versus
yeah,
tactical.
When I'm talking to the CEO, I'm always asking lots of strategy. And I want to know global strategy. I want to know domestic strategy. I want to know how it interplays. I want to know all about new markets, new geographies, new products, new services. I want to know the new, and where they're struggling. And then for a lower level, I might ask more operational questions. How do you do this? How do you do this? And is that the right way, you know?
New. Tell me more about that. Sorry, that was just practice.
Thanks, but talk more about that. Talk more about that.
Talk more. Thanks.
Yeah, it rolls off the tongue. Good job.
Our next question comes from Matthew Bovell.
Okay, Matthew.
Hi, Molly. You talked about the thank you note being optional. I want to follow up on an implication to that. Are you saying that at the end of the interview, in 90% of the cases, if the person's going to eliminate you, you're finished? I mean, there's nothing you could do really to redeem it afterwards?
I'd say it's in 99.9% of the situations. But here's the 1% where it makes a difference. And it's not the thank you note that makes the difference, but when you walk out of there, if you're the number two candidate and number one does not take the job, you might get it.
Okay.
Or they might start a new search.
Right.
So, but they know. They know when you walk out of there. Whether you're in the top, there might be another series of people that you have to meet with. But then when you walk out of there, those people know.
The thank you note, provided it's not full of typos and bad grammar, the thank you note could possibly give you that little edge, couldn't it?
Honestly,
you really don't think so?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, I think what could give you the edge is more relevant, like an article.
Right.
Like a book. You know, something like that that gives them thought-provoking content. Like a customer, like a lead.
Right.
That could do it. But the thank you note, meh.
Good. Thank you.
But I love receiving thank you notes, so. All right, no problem. Mark. Next question.
Our next question comes from Betty Hutchison.
Yeah, Betty?
Hi. You may have covered this at the beginning. I apologize. I came in a little late. But what if you have a telephone interview that is not just a screening interview but is more of a content interview? Are there any adaptations that you would recommend for that?
We talked a little bit about that earlier, but the telephone interview I would treat exactly like the one-on-one interview, the information where you ask a lot of networking questions. You ask a lot of questions. You control the whole thing. And don't let them at you. I mentioned you started off by saying, hey, just real quick, I have a quick question. Before we get started, I have a quick question. And then do not stop. Just keep asking question after question.
Thanks.
All right? Great.
Our next question comes from Rajan.
Yes, Rajan.
Oh, hi. So what if the interviewer asks a question with a question, like, you know, for example, you know, you're asking a question on the competitors, and they say, hey, who do you think are the competitors? Or how should we, how should we compete against them, right? And then the whole thing is turned back onto you.
Well, you say, boy, from what I see, your biggest competition is X, Y, and Z, but that's only from what I see from an outside perspective. Is that what you feel is the same from an insider's perspective? And I throw it right back on them. I'd also throw in a kind of a complete side turn that says, I heard this company was getting into your industry. Are you scared about that? How big of a threat is that to you? You know, with your research.
Hmm. Yeah, but I would say probably some of the smart interviewers, you know, they would make this, they'll always respond a question to a question until it becomes, and you probably should know the answer to the questions before you're asking these questions. Would you agree with that?
You're making a huge assumption that there are smart interviewers out there. And I got news for you. There's not a lot of them. It's amazing how much people put the concept of an interview as a reactive backseat. I mean, how horrible people are at interviewing people. It's absolutely astounding. They're relieved when you come in and be thought-provoking, interesting, and asking and controlling the questions. Mm. And they walk out of there. Especially, I would say, this is especially more relevant when you're dealing with a line of business versus HR. Because HR, they tend to do interviews, so they typically know what they're going to ask. But you can still do the same thing with HR people. But people who are in the line of business, they interviewing is not their... not what they're doing every day and not what they want to do every day. They want to get back to work. So I would be very surprised if the person who throws it back on you like that. But if they do, if they keep coming back to you with questions, you start sharing the stage. You answer a few questions, you give them a question, you answer a few questions, you give them a question. You start, sharing.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay? No problem.
Our next question comes from Ming Lam.
Hi, Molly.
Yeah.
Hi. Yes. Is it possible or anything we can do to get a first impression on a phone interview?
Well, be sure to, first of all, smile when you're on the phone. Put a mirror in front of your telephone and be sure you're smiling. Have engaging voice. There's been quite a few people I know who do phone interviews who have such a drab monotone voice that they're just sound drab and monotone, even though they're not. So have inflection in your voice, practice. Leave yourself a voicemail and hear what you sound like. And say, hi, how are you? Great to talk to you. And another thing to learn from is watch people who are being interviewed on television and watch how they act.
Oh.
And people who are polished and typically actors being interviewed, They'll control it very nicely. People who are not professionals tend to, it's going to be hit or miss to see who might have had media training or not. But people who have definitely had media training, it's fun to watch them because they'll give you all kinds of ideas of how you can be engaging and interesting and confident. And when they're not, it absolutely shows. But have inflection in your voice, smile on your face, be nice and interesting and sound fun. Sound engaging, enthusiastic. Okay.
Yeah, I have a second question.
Okay, go ahead.
Hi, sorry. This is a little bit maybe before the interview. If once I send the resume, I receive a nice reply. Is there anything I can do to ensure I will get an interview?
You can call up a friend who has a friend who works there and quit sending a resume and get a referral into the company, and that will at least get you a discussion.
Thank you.
But it might be too late because you already sent the resume, but hopefully not. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right. Our next question comes from Christian Henschreger.
Mm-hmm. Yes, hello. I have a question. I'm an EBMer from Germany trying to relocate to IBM Brazil.
Okay.
And I would like to know, what would you recommend to do if HR is not responding neither on emails nor on applications on specific jobs, open jobs, or neither on phone calls?
I would go around HR. I would go to the specific line of business, and I'd start connecting with people, go through the greater IBM network to find out who's in that division, and say, hey, and try and treat it like an informational interview. Hey, I'm just trying to better understand what you guys are doing. I'd love to have a conversation with you guys over there. Hey, I'm going to be out in Brazil in a month. I'd love to meet you in person. Who else do you think I could meet with?
Molly, Floor, I'd like to answer to that also. And you may be very carefully looking at the greater IBM connection because in the growth markets, there are opportunities that will be available to alumni. So I would suggest that, you know, get familiar with the directory, get familiar with the Career Center, and if not, you're welcome to send me an email and ask me more specifically what I'm speaking about. But there are opportunities within IBM in some of the growth markets that you might want to learn about.
Okay, I will do that. Thank you so much.
Our next question comes from Jill Camacho.
Hi, Molly. I have a
wait,
question.
Jill, hold on. Jill sounds fun. Hi, Molly. You know, like real confident, comfortable. So that's a good example of a good phone voice. Keep going, Jill.
Okay, thanks.
Sorry to put the pressure on you.
Well, I really like the whole idea of controlling the interview because it gives the impression that you're kind of a take-charge person and assuming that, you know, organizations are looking for that. But it seems to me that you have to also take the cues from the person who's interviewing you because you don't want to make sure that you have come across as take charge but not take over, especially if, you know, you're talking to the president and he knows he's the president. He wants to stay the president. He doesn't want someone coming in and not letting him get a word in edgewise. So I guess my question is, isn't it important to take the cues from them and maybe not be controlling if you're getting the, you know, the impression that he's not welcoming that?
Well, my experience has been that when I talk strategically and ask lots of questions to presidents and CEOs, they love it, and it's refreshing to them.
Okay.
It's absolutely different from what they're experiencing from other people. The other thing is, if I did that, and I'm kind of a go-getter. So when I go into a company, and if they're not go-getters, I'm going to either intimidate them or turn them off. But that's a good thing because I'm not the right fit for that company. So you have to remember that it's okay. If that's you, then it's okay to be that. And if you turn them off, it's okay because you weren't going to last there anyway.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, okay, great. Any more, Tori?
Our next question comes from Joseph Kentucky.
Okay, hey, Joseph.
Hey, Molly. Thanks for sharing your time today and taking us through this this topic.
No problem.
I just wanted to get your thoughts about turning a phone interview into a video chat. What are your thoughts about that? I mean, provided, you know, you've got good broadband at home or at your location, you've got good control over your situation where you would take the call from, what do you think about trying to take control of a phone interview and turn it into a video chat?
I'd say don't do it. Never, ever, ever. While you think you have good control over your internet bandwidth, you probably don't. And you never know what it's going to look like on their end of the screen. And also don't, if you are on video, don't ever wear a striped shirt that has horizontal stripes because you look like Horizontal Hold on television.
Okay.
I would say don't do it. There's too much lag time, and they've come out with some new technologies to make less lag time in video, but there's still too much lag time. I would have a face-to-face first. And if I can't do a face-to-face, I'd do a phone.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Our next question comes from Christine Dennell. Okay, Christine.
Hi, Molly. My question is related to internal interviews. So when you try to move within your own company to a different department, how do you handle all of these questions? There are a lot of subjects that you might already know, and is there anything different that you would suggest for an internal interview?
Treat the internal interview very much like an informational interview. Just remember, just because you're in the company doesn't mean you're in that department. So there might be some nuances and different things within that department, but treat it more like a networking conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You see someone, you say, gosh, I'd love to learn more about what you guys do over there. What, do you have time for a coffee? When's a good time? And make it a networking conversation. And again, through and you might want to go back and listen to the webinar on networking and getting a meeting and what to do in the meeting, because that will help you be very relaxed in the meeting. And the whole purpose of that is to get them to like you, to make them want you on your team. The more internally networked you are, the better opportunity you're going to have if something happens with your division.
So definitely internal preparation with a lot of networking before that interview happens.
Well, no, no. Take that interview and turn it into a networking conversation.
Okay.
So it's all about networking. Mm-hmm. If there were five departments I was interested in, I'd walk by them. I'd do the walk by all the time. If it's physically, geographically located close to you, I would also look for people who might have come from that department and connect with them that I knew and said, boy, I'd love to learn more about that department. Who do you know over there that I could have a chat with? And start working your network internally to get the conversation. But those are just conversations. Don't treat them like an interview.
Okay.
Treat them like a conversation among peers.
Thank
okay.
you.
Yep. Okay, great. Next.
Mart Samatter, your line is open.
Hey, Molly, how are you?
I'm great, Mart.
Yeah, my question is regarding the divisional promotional interview. So, like, in that situation, the interviewer really know you, and also you know the interviewer. And you need to prove that you are better than the colleague you have in your department. Do you have any suggestion for that scenario?
You know what? I really believe that a lot of those decisions are made before you ever get into the interview. And I believe those decisions are made based on how you perform, the extra things you do, how involved you are with the team. And so I would really focus on not waiting to get all your ducks in a row for that interview, but think that you're on an interview every single day. And how do I rise, you know, the cream rises to the top. How do I rise to the top? And think about what else you can be doing to make yourself visible to not only that person, but that person's boss. Because when that person comes to their boss and says, I've decided to hire Mark, that you want the boss to say, that is a great choice. Right?
Okay, yep.
So, okay.
That's also good. Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Next question.
Our next question comes from Vladimir. Your line is open.
Hi, Molly. I actually have two questions that I would like to ask. Do you believe, as some of the sales technique says, that the first 3 to 5 minutes are crucial for the final result? That's my first question. And the second question is, can you provide some more information how to determine who is the real decision maker when you have a few interviewers?
Okay.
I had some experience that the real decision maker sometimes just sitting in the corner and just being silent.
Okay. One of the things you have to do, I'll answer the second question first, then we'll go to the first part of that question, but finding out who the real decision maker, sometimes you'll never know. But one of the things, sometimes the person you think who's the real decision maker is not, it turns out they really weren't the real decision maker.
Exactly, yeah.
It's kind of a crapshoot, but what you might consider is be sure to ask your point person, who's really the decision maker in the room? Who needs to be bought into the process, but who's the ultimate decision maker? And just ask them, but don't ask it in a panel. Ask it in a one-on-one. And then also look for cues within the group. If that person who's sitting in a corner starts speaking because you asked them a question, see how attentively people listen to it, that person, then you kind of realize that person carries a lot more weight than you think they do. Okay? So I would certainly ask, are you the sole decision maker? Who else is involved in the decision? And let them tell you, because you'll never guess. You'll never be able to guess right. So, the first 3 to 5 minutes, are they crucial for the final result? I think it's important to make a very good impression. Are they going to make the decision in the first 3 to 5 minutes? I say no. Are they going to make the decision to say yes in the first 3 to 5 minutes? I say no. Are they going to make a decision to say no in the first 3 to 5 minutes? I say yes. So first 3 to 5 doesn't get you the job, but it ensures it doesn't get you a no. Okay? I think we can ask one more question, and I think then I'm going to hand it over to Floor for her to close it up.
Okay,
our last
thanks,
question. All right. Our last question comes from Mansing.
Mansing.
Hi, Molly. This is Man again. I was wondering how you respond to these open-ended questions. Tell me about yourself.
I never ask that question ever in a million years. That's how I. But you're saying to me, people are asking you that question, right?
Right. Yes.
So I would say, I'd be like, I'm the greatest person ever. What about you? You know, I don't know, because you want to deflect it. You don't want to say everyone hates talking about themselves, right? What you really want to do is move on from that question. I might deflect it and just say, that is a great question. Before I answer that, let me ask you a few questions and turn it right back around on them, because I really don't feel like answering that question. And I don't think anyone does. And that, and sometimes people will answer it with, well, what do you want to know? And that's a real confrontational way to answer it. I would never answer it that way, but I would deflect it probably, because I really don't feel like getting involved in that question. Does that help?
Okay. Well, interesting, because, you know, a lot of interview people start this so that you start blurbing about yourself, and then they'll get the cue for asking questions. I do not know.
But the problem is then you talk too much, and then you've already turned them off. So you
right.
101 in interviewing. So
yeah.
Don't answer, okay?
All right, good. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Flora, why don't we turn it back to you to close it on up?
Thank you, Molly, and thank you again for your time. I want to remind you again that Career on Track is now bi-monthly, so Molly will be back with her wisdom in May. Correct me, Molly?
Correct, yes.
So, Molly, look for her Career on Track number 9 on the second Thursday of May. As is customary, Molly is always with you on the second Thursday of the month. I'd like to ask two favors of those of you that are still left over in the call. Please, when you come to our member calls, it is important to the work and for the funding of this program from the Chairman's Initiative that we have an account of people, actual memberships. It's very difficult to keep track and create a database if what we get is an initial or a first name or a fake name on the call. So to the extent that you don't have an issue identifying with yourself, be so kind, please, as to offer your full name and last name when you join our call. The rest of the information, if you're a member of the Greater IBM Connection, it would take us a bit to track down, but we could. But it really allows us to communicate with you faster if we have your full information as the operator's request. And the second thing is, I'll remind everyone that for now 4 months, we've had a replace on the left-hand navigation of the events tab. Every event that is created for you in the community of Greater IBM, with the exception of the instructional calls, tips and tools, which is only recorded once, is available in some form, be it charts only or audio only or as a podcast for you to download onto your MP3 player in the events tab under replays. Scroll down from current events, scroll down past events, and you will find the replays, or just find it on the left in the left-hand navigation. Everyone always asks about the charts. Every single event is there. We're a bit late with LinkedIn because it takes a while to convert the format. But Molly should be up by tomorrow if you missed any part of a call. Are there any questions about replays or any questions about Molly? Molly should have a friend guest in April. She has not confirmed this to us, so look for her name in the coming 2 weeks. And if she is able to join us with a colleague peer, she will bring you Molly and friends next month. Any questions?
And, Flora, we might just, if people have additional questions, be sure to post them in the Greater IBM Career Forum under Ask Molly.
That's
and
correct.
Sometimes I don't get to them as soon as I wish I did, but I'm doing my best. So please be a little patient if your question sits out there for a little longer than you planned. Okay?
It also helps that, you know, you hear a lot, pretty much just different tones of the same question. So Molly's pretty diligent about checking the Ask Molly, and it is a good place for you to catch her when she's not trying to mind 200 people in a chat room and speak from charts and, you know, attend to your personal questions on the phone. It's challenging. We appreciate your bearing with the glitches of today. sadly, I think sometimes we overload the tools and things happen. But there are great numbers in this community, which is what makes it most interesting. It just grows the challenge for the technology. So thank you for your patience, and we'll see you next month. And if not, Molly, we'll be back with you for Career on Track number 9 in May.
Thanks,
thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining today's conference call. All parties may disconnect at this time.